Wait.
Are you hitting record?
Okay. I am hitting record over and over and over again.
No, no, no. That'll stop it from recording, Jeffrey.
Right. It's going to be a dip, dip, but that dip. All right. It is, what's the date? March 14th. Tuesday, March 14th. And this is On Taking Pictures. That's the best Ryan Seacrest I can do. It's really bad.
Wow, there was just thunder outside.
Was it really?
Yeah, like boom, crash, thunder.
There you go. The universe is happy that this is the show.
Apparently.
So it's episode 255 of On Taking Pictures, your weekly blast of photographic goodness.
And hail.
And hail.
At least if you're in the Northeast.
Right. You've got hail. We've got, I guess it would be sleet down here.
Okay. Because it's just slushy rain.
Yeah, it's just slushy, but it's not, I mean, it's nothing. It's very light. So Bill Wadman is in Haley, New York, and I'm Jeffrey, and I'm in slushy Silver Spring.
You know, the other day I met a guy and I gave him my card because we were talking about stuff.
This wasn't in a park late at night, was it?
No. And he was above 18. And he looks at my card and he says, Wadman. He goes, I knew a Wadman. And I was like, what? Because it's not a very common name.
Right.
And the guy knew a guy back in 1967 named like Albert Wadman, who was a blind professor at some college that he went to. And he said like the guy
uncle
was
uncle or a cousin or anything?
It's got to be some distant cousin of mine.
Huh.
Which I just thought was really kind of, you know, it's, I mean, do you meet that many people who look at you and go, oh, I knew a Sidoris once?
No.
Right.
Exactly. I had one person reach out like on Facebook years and years ago and say, hey, I've got the same last name as you. No relation, but, right. You know, it was kind of weird, I guess.
Anyway, I just, it was very, very odd. But yeah, so here we are. So yeah, it's a big giant hole of mess outside of my window right now. I can't see more across the street. I can see the building. Beyond that is just white.
It is lovely here. It's absolutely. I mean, it's a little dusting of snow. We got like 3 or 4 inches, but it's beautiful. It's clear, not clear like, you know. I mean, clear like you can see across the street. It's not doing anything right now. We did a ton of cleanup. We did like 16, you know, those big Home Depot lawn and leaf bags, like 16 of those bags filled with leaves and detritus and all this kind of stuff from the backyard, but it looks beautiful.
Well, that's what you got to do sometimes. It's although the whole maintenance of having a yard.
Yeah, but that okay, so that much accounts for like a 20 by 25 foot area of the yard.
Oh, you had a lot of stuff back there.
And yeah, and we've got, you know, a half acre. So we need a bigger bag.
Yeah, there. When I was growing up, we had like an acre and a half lot, you know, up in Connecticut, my father would do this thing, and you know, this is maybe a thing to discuss sometimes. My father would do this thing where we'd go outside to rake the leaves, say, and he'd be like, "Oh, we're gonna, you know, let's rake the leaves. We'll go up to the wall up there, whatever it is, you know." And so you go up to the wall, and then he'd go, "You know what? Let's do a little more. We'll go all the way to there." It's like,
right.
You just keep moving the goalpost, right?
By the end of the day,
if you had just told me we were going to do the whole thing, you know what I mean? I wouldn't be so pissed.
Your father basically just duped you into spending your weekend
exactly
raking leaves.
Which, you know, when you're a kid, that's annoying anyway. But beyond that, it's sort of like, okay, well, I thought this was going to take 2 hours, and I made plans, and now you're telling me that it's going to take 4 or 6 hours. Right.
Go in the house and call your friends. Tell them you're not going to be
exactly. There. So why didn't you just tell? Oh, it drove me crazy. I hate when people move the goalpost now.
Yeah,
it's like this like little thing. But we've survived. So that's right. What do you want to talk about today? We got lots of stuff.
Well, okay. For in the show notes for next week, there you found this New York Times article, which is fascinating. But I think both of us want to kind of give it another pass.
Want to grok it one more time.
Yeah, and it's an article about. I guess the creative approach, would you say? creative approach between Beck and Kendrick Lamar, how each of them see the sort of creative process and how they approach it from very distinct angles, I think.
Yeah, and its importance in the modern world and you know what's going on now. Can you hear that crazy truck going by?
No.
Oh, sorry. It was a plow truck just went by really loud.
Yeah, there's some good stuff in there. There's one thing that kind of jumped out at me with Tom Waits, and he says, music is emotional once you transcend the equipment.
Ha! Huh. I think that's true of everything. But yeah, right. Let's discuss that next time.
So next week, that'll be for next week. But take a look at it, put it in the show notes. It's pretty cool.
Tom Waits also said that trying to get songs on a compilation is like bringing chickens to the beach.
So, there you go.
So he's got a lot of stuff going on in his
mind. He's not clucking around.
Oh. Wow, that was bad. Wow, that was bad.
Yeah.
So yeah, Kendrick Lamar, Tom Waits, yeah. And Beck. Yep.
Yeah.
So last week, what did I talk about? Did I say Filmic? Is that why we brought this up?
Filmic Pro. Yeah, that's what you were talking about.
All right, so we thought it would be fun to just sort of do a quick rundown of the apps we actually
use. What's on your home screen? Let's do that. Because I mean...
Well, what's on my home screen is really boring. It's like Instagram and messages and Twitter. I have Google Plus on there, although that doesn't really need to be on there. Google Calendar, which is what I use. I use...
What about your photo apps? What do you...
I almost exclusively to take photos, I use the stock photo app. I'm one of those guys. However, lately, Lightroom is getting really good. Have you played with Lightroom lately on the phone?
No.
First of all, last time I imported pictures. So when I'm traveling for this daily thing and I don't bring a laptop with me, I bought one of these little SD card to Lightning adapters. For whatever it is, $30 or whatever. And I have my camera shoot small JPEG, which on my camera is 23 megapixels or something.
Right.
Shoot small JPEG in RAW. And the last time I did it a couple months ago, it pulled in the, when I plug it in, it pulls up the import box in the camera, the photos app, and it can download them onto the phone. And the last time I did it up in a couple weeks ago, it actually pulled the RAWs in. And Lightroom actually processed the RAW files on the phone.
Lightroom, for those people who don't use Lightroom on the desktop, Lightroom Mobile act as a standalone?
Yes, because I don't have it connected in any way to my desktop version.
Okay, so you can just process the photo on Lightroom Mobile and then save it to your camera roll.
And then export it back out. Yeah.
Yeah,
and do it just like that, yep.
Yeah.
Okay. So I've done that before, and it's getting really powerful. I mean, you know, a lot of the things you can do, all the highlights and shadows and blah blah blah, you know, all that kind of stuff. But the fact that it's actually was working on a 50 megapixel RAW file is incredible.
Yeah,
I mean, it's slow. I have a 6S is what I use, an iPhone 6S, which you know is fast enough, but not the fastest thing in the world. And with that kind of stuff, it really shows you the difference between a mobile something and a real computer, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Lightroom, what else do I have on my list? That Tiny Planet, remember we used that for like the radial thing?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Where it turns a horizon into like a little circle in the middle.
Sure.
That's pretty cool. There's an app called Negative Me that I downloaded when I was up at Conrad's mother's house a couple years ago, because there were a bunch of negatives on at there, and I wanted to see what they were looking like. So I was taking pictures of them and then bringing them into something and trying to like invert them and all the rest of it. And I was like, wait a minute, there's got to be an app for this. And there's this one called Negative Me that Jeffrey just inverts whatever you're looking at on the camera. So you can just hold negatives up and it automatically like lets you see on the screen. Like you basically just point the camera at a negative and it shows you like video of the opposite of it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. It's called Negative Me. Repost, which is, you know, the one that lets you repost.
Yeah, sure. I use Instagram. That. Repost,
Do you think Instagram would be better off if they added reposting internally?
Yes.
Or do you think that would be a big mess of people just like resharing everything all the time?
I mean, no, because they've changed the way they... I think it would be nice, but you know, whatever. It's not that big of a deal. It's not that big of a conundrum to do it.
Another one called cross process, which basically just does weird things that kind of looks like you've cross processed film. So it messes right. with light and stuff. There's one that Coupon uses that he said doesn't exist anymore. Like he has some app on his phone that he's like grandfathered into. You know how when you buy an app and then they can take it off the store, but the people who bought it can still get it?
Yes.
Is that true? Okay, that's a thing. So he's got one that I can never remember the name of that he loves that makes everything kind of like look retro and red and old, and I'll have to ask him what it is. Easy Release, which does model releases, which is really cool because you can type in all the stuff, it'll grab the location, and then people sign it on there, and you take a picture of the person, and you can automatically have it emailed to the person. Like, whoop. It emails it to them.
That's cool.
And it
emails a copy of it to them. Yeah.
To you and to them. It's really great. So Easy Release. Lately, I've been playing. A few weeks ago, I did a picture of my tap dance friend, and I had it like a strobe effect where it's like, brrr, you know, like jumping in the air. So I don't know if I mentioned this on the show, but the way I did that is I used a strobe light app on my phone to do at a certain rate just the flash on the phone. You know, you can have it like flash. And I just held that up to the sync slave light on my Einstein. And it made the Einstein go bop, 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 bop,
bop, whatever rate it was. Yeah,
and you could control the rate. I mean, it's like a hack, but it's like a kind of a, you know, just messing around kind of hack.
Yeah.
And there's a thing called Focal Mark that helps you pull hashtags for Instagram posts. Like you give it information of like what kind of picture this is and where'd you take it and stuff and with what camera. And it gives you 30 of the best hashtags for that setup, which is kind of cool. And the guy's doing it as a Kickstarter or something like that. You pay $10 and you get like a more personalized version of it. So I actually supported that just to see what happens with it. I have some other ones that are not photo, but why don't we talk about your photo ones first?
My photo ones, I use one called Photograph with an F, Photograf. That's one of the ones that I use the most for processing. I tend to use the built-in camera app to take them.
Isn't it funny? It's the most responsive.
Yeah. Nlight is another one that I use for processing. Very occasionally Snapseed. I've got a black and white app called Blackie that's really cool that does your own custom presets, but then it's got film presets built in, but it's only in black and white. The preview window is only in black and white. So that's kind of neat if you just kind of want to see the world in black and white. My light meter, I use that with my 124G when I go out shooting, and it gets pretty close to the mark.
Yeah, you know those light meter apps? That's a good one. Which one is yours called? Just light meters?
My light meter is
my
what
light meter. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I have one called light meter, pocket light meter or something like that. Yeah, they're not bad. Like it's pretty close. They're not bad.
I mean, it's definitely gets you in the ballpark. And I tend to then whatever it gives me, I tend to underexpose that by about a third stop anyway.
Okay. All right. By the way, that Photograph app you just mentioned, I'm just looking it up on here, and it says Photograph's astounding 96-bit non-destructive image editing. It's like, what? What do you mean 96-bit inside whatever. Of an iPhone?
Yeah.
Good it job. Brings the true depth of film to your iPhone and iPad, Jeffrey.
Right, for your 8-bit JPEG.
Yeah.
I use one called Skew for correcting distortion on architecture. It allows me to square up some things. Yeah, SKEW, just like it sounds. And you can correct pin cushion distortion, barrel distortion. You know, you can pull each corner independently and correct. That's a pretty cool one.
Oh, that one's really cool. $1.99 for that one.
Yeah.
How do you feel about paying for apps versus not paying for apps? Which apps are you willing to pay for? Do you have any rules on that?
Generally, if I have any interest in it at all and it's less than $3, I'll buy it.
Okay. Fair enough.
Just because it's, you know, like we were talking last week, it's a cup of coffee or something, you know,
right,
and
exactly.
I'll look at reviews and things like that. But generally I won't balk at anything less than $3 if I even have a passing interest in it.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, those are the big photo apps. Okay. I use Wunderlist to try and get things done.
I'm a Todoist. I've started using that one. Wunderlist, I liked it, but it almost felt a little too skeuomorphic for me.
Yeah, it is a little bit. I'm still kind of looking for another one. Yeah. There's one called Great Big Story, which is a terrific app for these little video vignettes of kind of quirky, interesting stories. And by and large, they're 3 minutes or less. So you can kind of just flip through them when you're on the train or, you know, whatever.
What do you use for your Twitter app? Do you just use Twitter?
I use Tweetbot.
Okay. All right. I use Vox for music instead of the internal player because I can't stand the music app and on iOS now.
Oh, I don't know Vox. Vox.
Yes. It pulls the same audio. It pulls all the same information, you know, as your music app. So it's like just pulling from the same music that happens to be on your phone.
Oh,
but
cool.
I just like the presentation and the way that it handles itself. Feels much more like the old music app, like a revised version of the old music app than this new thing, which is trying to get you to buy Apple Music all the time.
Yeah, that's.
I'm annoying. A local guy. I'm not a streaming guy. Like, I don't like streaming music. I don't pay for any of those services.
I use the free Spotify version.
Oh, sure. Also Signal.
I use Signal more and more, actually.
I know you and I should actually start using Signal.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And LastPass. I'm a LastPass user when it comes to password management.
See, one password for me.
Okay. And Moves, which is one that like keeps track of where you've been and how many steps and all that kind of stuff and like kind of maps out everywhere you go each day.
Yeah.
Google Authenticator, because I use two-factor on a lot of my accounts.
Right.
Adobe Color, which I don't know if it's available anymore. Have you ever seen this app?
I know the one that was, is that the, it's, well, there's, there was Cooler, K-U-L-E-R.
Right. No, this
is it the updated version of that?
I don't know if it's the updated version of that. It's okay. So what this app does is you take a picture of something, right? Like, let's say a scene that you see right in front of you and you tell it how many colors you want. Let's say 10 or whatever it is. It actually might be Cooler now. Let's see. Color is Cooler. No. Okay. Cooler became Color, apparently. Adobe Color CC. So basically what it does is it allows you to take a picture of something and then say, pull out colors from this, pull out 5 colors, and it'll pull out a palette from that image. And it's really useful, I find it, if you go to, say, a museum and you see a painting, you're like, God, I love the colors in that painting. You can take a picture of the painting and have it pull out a palette for you. Because if you were just like, oh, I like that mood or whatever, those oranges versus those cyans or whatever, it'll pull those exact colors and give you RGB or CMYK or whatever numbers for the different colors in it.
That's kind of cool.
It's not the kind of thing I use all the time, but sometimes if I'm like, God, that's, you know, that ad or whatever it is really beautiful. Like, have you seen the new ads for the Americans?
Yes.
That are all like 1980s and it's like yellow background or whatever?
Yeah, they're great.
Like, those are beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that. Like, I might walk by that and go, wow, that's really neat. Take a picture of it and figure out these colors. And then you can save color sets, color palettes. So I thought you might actually get a kick out of that.
It doesn't, I mean, I'm looking for it. It doesn't look
does like it not exist. Maybe they want you to get, they might want you to, I don't know, same, new name, same colors, Adobe Color CC. Maybe I'm grandfathered into it. I think they tried. There's another one that's similar that I think maybe they integrated all this stuff into. Anyway.
There's Pantone.
No, it's definitely it's not Adobe. Let's see what they say here.
Might be the Pantone app because it works with the Creative Cloud.
Yeah, this Cross Color Street. CC. Here's a link here. I'll send you a thing in the robot here.
Okay.
Let's see if it still exists.
What else? Strava. I use Strava for running and biking.
Oh, okay. And if you're in New York and you want a good subway app, the one to get is called Exit Strategy.
Ah, okay. I use Transit down here.
Yeah, it's not good at telling you like what trains to get on. Like, I can figure that out myself. But what it's really handy for is it's got maps of where the exits come out on the real streets.
Oh, that's cool.
And it also tells you like
where the actual staircases are
and where the staircases are next to what car on the train. So if you look at it and you go, oh, it's 4 cars back, right? So let me get on the 4th car back to.
Oh, that's cool. That's handy. Yeah.
So I use it for that all the time. So it's really good in that way. There's other stuff, but that's about it.
Okay, so the link you just sent me, get this, listeners. The item you requested is not currently available in the U.S. store, but it is available in the Maltese store.
What?
Click change store to view this item.
Maltese?
Yeah.
Oh, weird. Okay. Well, maybe anyway. We'll have to figure out what
If I change to Falcon.
I'll... I think they want you to use capture CC now, maybe.
Oh.
But anyway, it might have the same set of features in there. Maybe they just like consolidated, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a cool little thing. Have you tried the Nic? Those are the ones that Google bought, right?
Yeah, Nic Field. I don't use them. I know Fielding uses them, I think. Or no, Snapseed. She uses Snapseed. Nic is the one on the PC or the Mac. Yeah, I don't use those.
Oh, okay. But Google, aren't there mobile versions of those? No? Am I crazy?
I think that's Snapseed.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Or maybe
okay.
Maybe there is. I don't know.
All right. I'm just thinking about names of things that I don't use that I guess other people do use.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? It's like, I tend to use I could use my phone. Remember in the old days, when the iPhone first came out and it really was just the internal apps and everyone was like angry and then they started the App Store. I could survive with just the internal apps. You know, like I use a browser. I use Mail. By the way, I use Inbox for my Gmail, which is really great because it shows you, like if you have images in line with the picture, you can see the pictures, you know, in the, in like the inbox, there's like little thumbnails of the pictures that are attached in the thread. So, which is really handy. So
I use, I waffle between using, one Ego just called email. Email and Spark.
Oh, okay. You're jumping around.
Yeah.
You're jumping up and getting down.
That's right. And getting down.
Anyway.
I also use this app called Procreate Pocket.
Oh, Procreate. Yeah.
And I just found it recently, but I've been using it to generate like color studies for upcoming paintings. It does brush strokes really well. It does color mixing really well.
Is that the kind of thing that people use on an iPad, or is it just a...
Yes. In fact, the iPad version, it works with the pencil and then it becomes pressure sensitive.
Ah, right.
So... Yeah, I'd kind of like to see it. Apple is supposed to be releasing 3 new iPads next month.
I'm hoping to be able to get a 12-inch used once the new ones come out.
Yeah, that's a nice piece of kit.
Well, it's like I don't have any real need for it except for as a portfolio.
Could you tether to it while you're shooting?
No. What you can do is get... you know, it's funny because Dan and I have been playing around with different ways to use my camera in some sort of tethered mode. And it tethers fine to like a computer with Lightroom. But the other thing we've come up with is just plugging the HDMI into an external monitor.
Oh.
So basically you just get a big version of the screen on the back and all the controls on the camera, you know, conform to what you see on the screen.
You get like one of those little iAtmos or Atmos Ninjas or something?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you get something with like a little 5 or 7 or whatever inch screen.
Yeah.
And then when you zoom into 100%, you're seeing it on a 7-inch screen as opposed to a little tiny thing.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Most of the time, that's all you're doing. I mean, other than times when other people need to see it on other monitors and there's ways to do that. A lot of the times with tethering, it's all about, I just want to be able to pop these open in 100%, make sure they're sharp and that kind of stuff, make sure there's shadow detail. So, what I want it for really is just as a portfolio that I could carry around. I mean, the 12-inch one is kind of a sheet of paper. It's like an 8x10 portfolio or an 8.5x11 sheet. Cause the regular 9.7-inch iPad, just a little too small compared to a book. You know what I mean? Like if you see a book and then you see an iPad, it's like, the book looks bigger and better. But the 12-inch is good enough, but I just can't justify $700 for a portfolio that I'm only going to use for that. But if you can get a used one for $400 when the new ones come out, then, you know.
Well, and apparently one of the new models is a 10.5-inch iPad Pro with a smaller bezel. So it actually gives you a bigger screen. So
it's going to be interesting. We'll see. Yeah. Maybe this is the pro stuff that Tim Cook says is coming out. I hope that's not his answer to the pro market.
Right. A pro, an iPhone Pro. That's the other one.
Oh, God. Yeah. Just because you put the name pro after it doesn't mean it's made for professionals.
Doesn't mean it's pro. Right.
In fact, it's sort of like having something be called like the VIP version. If it says VIP, then it's not VIP.
It's probably not. That's right. Hey, before we get to the depression thing that we talked about.
Yeah.
I thought you might find this interesting, and maybe you can watch it if you interview with Chrissy Hynde from I don't know, 2015 or 16, I think, on Q. And something to think about, and we can maybe talk about it, because it would kind of dovetail into the next week's episode. She talks about going to see all these different bands when she was very young, like 13, 14 years old, going to see, you know, not only local bands, but this was the time when, you know, she can remember exactly where she was seeing, you know, the first Jimi Hendrix record, or, you know, going to see the Stones at little clubs, or going to see, you know, some of her best memories of bands are bands that maybe weren't giant, but there was such an immersion there that it's almost like she couldn't have been anything other than what Chrissy Hynde is. You know, she had to become, you know, this person, this musician, this sort of, you know, she's in her 60s, I guess. And, you know, she's still kind of a punk.
Yeah, sure.
And so I wanted to talk about like immersion and what type of effect that may have versus finding something later on.
Okay.
You know, and we can use Chrissy as an example, or somebody like Tony Hawk, who has only ever ridden a skateboard.
Yep.
He's never done anything else. Or Kelly Slater, who has only ever surfed and has never done anything else. And he's still, you know, kicking the ass of guys half his age.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's totally. Absolutely. Okay. That sounds good. We talked a little, we hinted at this last week a little bit. Ren Hang. Is that the way to pronounce that, you think?
I believe so.
Who was a young Chinese photographer, 29 years old, I guess.
Yep.
Who had a bunch of solo shows and, you know, was getting a lot of, notoriety in the, gallery world.
And yeah, was really blowing up.
Yeah. And was making a lot of work that was often thought of, I think, as dangerous in the Chinese country, because he was doing nudes and he was doing some quasi explicit kind of things and breaking out of taboos and blah, 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 you know. Did they explicitly say that he did kill himself, or did they sort of jump around it?
No, he jumped off the 28th floor of a building.
Oh God. And he from what we've read, it sounds like he really, was dealing with depression for years. In fact, there's this, poem. You want to read that poem at the end, the short poem? At the end of the New York Times
thing?
Yeah,
that's a wreck. Yeah. Gift is the title, dated July 2014. He wrote in Chinese, "Life is really one precious gift, but sometimes I feel that it has been given to the wrong person."
And I think that, the reason we bring this up is that, you know, we've talked about this for 700 episodes.
right.
That, you know, Jeffrey and I have both dealt with depression and all the rest of it, that goes along with it. I see this kind of stuff in this person who had so much promise and was apparently just, you know, kind of stuck in his own head, like spinning out of control. To the point where he felt like he couldn't do it anymore. And that's very, very sad.
Let me ask you something, because we have talked about depression, but correct me if I'm wrong. The depression that by and large, the depression that we talk about is, at least in my life and maybe yours too, is around specific events or specific times in our life. Whereas it seems that with Ren,
right,
it seems like there was a depression. His friends called it a cyclical depression. No particular reason, no particular event, at least that we can glean from this article, that sparked it. There just seemed to be this general sense of depression, despite the growing notoriety of his work,
right?
Or you know, there doesn't seem to be tied to, you know, in our case, it's the loss of a parent, or
sure.
or maybe for those of you listening, a divorce or a yeah. breakup, or you know, the death of a family member, something like that. It just seemed to be kind of a general depression that he couldn't break out of. He writes in late January, he wrote on the Chinese social media site Sina Weibo.
Okay.
W-E-I-B-O, Weibo, Sina Weibo. Quote, every year I have the same hope to die early, end quote. Quote, I hope it can happen this year, end quote.
To clarify,
that seems to be very different.
Mine used to be very much like his. In this, I was never
really?
Manic, okay. I was never manic depressive in the way that he uh-huh, seems to have uh-huh. been. But I was definitely clinically depressed for no good reason for years and hmm. years and years. I haven't been for a very long time. Well, a very long time being, you know, the last 10 years or so.
Right.
But before that, like from college until pretty much when I met my wife.
Right.
I was in pretty bad way a lot of the time. So I kind of get what he's talking about. Although he sounds like it was manic depression. I mean, just the term, what did they say? Cyclical.
Yeah. Cyclical depression.
So he must have been way up and way down, you know, that kind of thing. Sorry. Go ahead.
It doesn't seem like, I mean, there were only a very few times where I thought about The Long Dark.
Right.
Whereas it seems like for Ren and maybe some of you listening to the show, that's a daily struggle.
Yeah. 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 Or an obsession, you know, right? It's like, it's something you can't get out of your own head. Like it's always behind you and you're turning around to see it and it's not there.
Right. I wish that there was a little more context in this piece about his relationship with his friends.
Yeah.
And was there, cause we don't get from this article, whether or not there was a support system that he had, or whether he threw himself into his work and friendships were sort of superficial or fleeting. I don't get, did you get anything from that? Whether,
no,
whether there was something around
it's him? Interesting because he said, there's also a part where he said he had a relatively trouble-free childhood, maybe too normal, he once told a reporter. Who asked him how he had fallen into depression. So, I mean, yeah, it doesn't, it's, I mean, look, I can't understand this guy from reading a few articles about him.
Sure.
But I've known people like this.
Yeah.
And I can comment on the way they see the world and, you know, this, even if there are people around, they tend to be loners, or mm-hmm. at least they think that they're loners, even if they're around a lot of other people. I mean, this is a lot of this stuff is just the way your mind perceives the inputs. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it's like wrong or that it's easily fixed or anything like that. I'm not saying any of that, but what I am saying is that somebody who is normally, chemically balanced, standardly chemically balanced, we'll take the inputs of, oh, I'm hanging out with my friends and we had a good time this weekend and blah, 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 blah. And come away of like, oh, I have friends and people who love me, where the same inputs to somebody who's depressed at this level, we'll just see that as like, oh, they don't really like me. And, you know, and mm-hmm. I'm always alone anyway, even when I'm with people and all these kinds of things. And it's really sad. I mean, the reason I wanted to throw this in the mix for our purposes is just the idea that, you know, we're talking to thousands of people right now.
Yes.
And there are some people out there who are listening to us who feel this way all the time. And it's been said before, and it's worth saying again, you are not alone. There are other people who feel the way you do, and there are things that can be done to help you. So please get help.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's sad. You have this guy who's 29 years old, who's not going to make any more work. You know, like these beautiful things that he made are the end of it. You know, I wonder, can I do like a slight tangent for a second?
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Do you think that there's ever a case for, I mean, we talked a little bit about when we were talking about Chuck Close. Remember that crazy Chuck Close article?
Right.
Where he was like, you know, hey, you know, he was talking to Paul Simon. He's like, you're never done. You just keep going.
Yeah. You can't be done. You're an artist. Just there's always something to say.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you think that there, that there's an argument for somebody like him? He might've said, you know what? I've said everything I want to say. So what's the point of continuing? You know, you think that that sort of is a possibility of the kind of mindset somebody could get into?
Certainly, I think it's possible.
Yeah.
It just seems, I don't know, it seems odd in that he was 29 years old, and even in this Times article, his photos were shown in more than 20 solo and 70 group shows around the world. So there was interest in his work.
Yeah. This picture of him 1 week before his death is in Stockholm.
Yeah.
So the guy's traveling around, obviously getting some notoriety,
but maybe he's not getting anything out of it.
Well, I mean, that again goes back to the sort of input thing, right? It's like, you have all the money in the world. You have all these friends. Everyone loves you. And it's still not enough. Well, then the not enough isn't external. That's internal. You know, and that's something that needs to be looked at. But, you know, if a million people loving you isn't enough, then 2 million isn't going to be either.
Right. Yeah, it's odd. I mean, his work, it's not really my cup of tea.
Yeah. I was going to ask you what you thought of his work.
It's not really my thing.
Right.
But I've also, I mean, there are a couple of pictures of his that I really like. But I think it's not the market or not the circle that I run in.
Sure. Sure.
You know, that sort of gallery, fine art, photography, sort of almost fringe art scene is not something that I really spend a lot of time with.
There's also an argument too. We shouldn't be too flippant about it, but you know, just because you're in X group shows and solo shows and in galleries,
absolutely
doesn't mean that isn't a nightmare and dealing with all those people and they could have said, you know, none of this stuff is selling and we're cutting you off or, you know, cutting you loose or whatever. I mean,
right.
We have no idea what was going on in his life. Not that any of that is any sort of justification, just sort of, you know, we're looking at it from the outside. This is the classic, you know, superficial understanding and then real understanding of what somebody's going through at any particular time.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I wonder if there was a relationship that went south.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Was there a friendship that ended? What was it that was, what was the catalyst that caused him to lift his foot on the 28th floor?
Right.
Was it a culmination? Was it a singular event? I don't know. I mean, again, for me, getting to that point were singular events, and feeling like there was an emptiness that wouldn't be filled.
Right. Okay.
That this was going to be a black and white place forever. So I don't know. It's hard to talk about without on one hand sounding dismissive if you haven't been there.
Right.
And I think that's one of the things that you and I have in common is that we kind of have been there.
Sure.
And at that threshold, but made a different choice.
Yeah.
But for so many people, they do see that as the only way out. And,
you know, another thing to throw into the mix is the cultural expectations. I mean, he supposedly was really pushing the boundaries.
Yeah.
So there's also this, you know, how dare you do this to what is so great about being Chinese or however, you know,
right, right.
The pressure.
At every turn, your own culture is sort of excommunicating you from the culture.
Right. How dare you kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, which is probably a big chunk of why he was doing it in the first place was sort of that kind of pushing back against his culture, but it's something that, that needs to be thought about.
Have you seen the, I have not seen the book. Have you seen it? The Taschen book?
I haven't seen the book. I mean, I've only, seen pages of it from, I mean, it's very explicit. I was going to use him originally as a photographer of the week, but I was like, yeah, we can't really show any of that.
Yeah. It's that's the other thing is if you are looking at this article and decide to dig further, it, very much not safe for work.
By the way, it says, like his champion, Ai Weiwei. So apparently he had a little help from above, as it were. I mean, there's this beautiful Taschen book that it's very nice. I like the star cutout on the cover.
Yeah, the die cut. Yeah,
the die cut. Did you see the picture of the octopus on the woman's head? It's in the Taschen. That's a really weird picture.
Well, changing gears a little bit, it kind of reminds me of, what is his, I'm going to butcher his pronunciation, Jaiman Hunsu? Is that how you pronounce his name?
Who's that?
The picture that Herb Ritz did, Herb Ritz octopus, let me see. Yeah. You'll know the actor when you see him here.
Yeah. It's totally like that. I like the Herb Ritz version better. Yeah. That actor, he was,
he was in Gladiator with Russell Crowe.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I found a version of it at the Getty. I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah. I mean, some of the work of Ren Hang, I do like. I love the shot of the girl with the snake.
Yep. Yeah, where it's covering her breast and kind of swirling her head. Yeah.
Yeah, that red with the yellow of the snake, and that's a terrific shot.
Yeah.
Some of the more explicit. I like the one again in the book with the girl's hair kind of woven into the grass.
Yeah.
That's a cool shot. But some of the more explicit stuff, it seems like it's explicit for the sake of being explicit. And I don't understand what he's trying to say with that work.
Yeah, doesn't every generation do that?
Sure.
To some extent. And sure. I was never that kind of guy. Like, I was never the kind of young person who was always trying to, like, push the borders and make the people above me angry. And, you know, but that seems like a goal to a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and I'm sure that there are myriad other examples of artists and photographers and whatever throughout history who have these kinds of problems, but what were you going to say?
In a 2013 interview, Vice Magazine asked, quote, "There are a lot of dicks. Do you just like dicks?" End
and
quote.
His answer?
Ren responded, "It's not just dicks I'm interested in. I like to portray every organ in a fresh, vivid, and emotional way." What do you think of that?
I think that this is a good answer. It would have been funny too if he also said, "I also like dicks." That would be really funny. I don't know. I look at a lot of kind of stuff like that, and you hear the explanation that people have for why it's good or why they like it or why they're trying to what they're trying to do. And sometimes, especially when it's some sort of quasi-sexual explicit thing, like a lot of his work seems to be.
Right. And I mean,
all the talking in the world is still overwhelmed by the shock value of whatever it is that you're doing, at least in Western society.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. And like you mentioned earlier, every generation, or not, maybe not every, but many generations have had it. We've seen it with Mapplethorpe. You know, we've seen it with, to a certain degree, Ellen von Unwerth, on the other side. I try and find, in looking through the article and looking through his work, I've tried to find some of the pieces that I like, and I do like some of his work in the same way that I do like some of Mapplethorpe's work.
Sure.
You're never going to like everything that everyone does.
I will tell you though, even, and this just shows you what generation I'm in and what I value in my own work and in other people's work. I look at Mapplethorpe's work and I go, you know what, regardless of whether or not it's some sexual explicit thing involving a whip, it's lit really nice and it's a technically beautiful photograph. Where some of these, I'm like, it's just on camera flash. Like, it bores me. Like, it doesn't show a lot of craft, even if it is a beautiful composition, you know? And I may be wrong, and it might be a different kind of craft, but, you know, that's just where my mind instantly goes, is sort of like, oh, okay, he's a good idea, but he's like, essentially, even if he's taking it with a phase one, you know, 100 megapixel IQ 100, IQ 3100, it's like, to me, it looks like an iPhone shot. So it's like, there's part of it for me that I want more elegance and light, but that's me. I like dimensionality, where I guess he doesn't.
See, and that's interesting, because somebody like Daido Moriyama, for example, some of his stuff goes way to the other side, almost just completely eschewing technical perfection.
Yeah, but those things almost become graphic, right?
And
that's a whole different thing, where they almost look like screen prints or something like that.
Right.
You know.
Right. Right. And they look that, like photocopies. Or
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
sure,
that
sure.
I like, but that's a different aesthetic.
Does it seem more intentional? Is that maybe what you're?
Yeah,
you're reading
that's
into
probably
it?
It's even the Daido Moriyama stuff, you would not get that straight out of the camera, right? You know what I mean? Or at least I don't.
So there are some choices being made to get there.
Yeah. And it's funny because the person I'm using for the person I pulled for Photographer of the Week has a little bit of that going on that I wanted to discuss with you.
I can't believe we haven't used him, by the way. Have we not?
Did we double check?
I looked at the list. I could have sworn that we used him. We've talked about him, but we didn't use him.
Okay. Then great.
Yeah.
Okay. But
anyway, so all that to say, if you are spiraling, if you are spinning, talk to somebody.
Yeah. I mean,
talking about it is
the important thing. I mean, even if you just sit down with somebody you trust and air out what's going on in your head, in my experience, that the problem is keeping it cooped up, right? It's like, it's like a mental abscess or something, you know?
We got a couple emails. I don't want to say who sent them, because I don't know if he or she wants us to. But we got one, and then we got a follow up. Did you see those?
Yes, but go ahead.
Okay. So here, you know what? Hold on a sec. Let me find those, because they're kind of talking about, actually it was a response to my newsletter. Mm-hmm. But he or she.
Oh, I didn't get those then.
Okay. So, I'm struggling with a mountain of crap right now. And the tempting thing to do is just take a scoop off the top and say, here's my problem, and come up with some wonderfully uplifting way of dealing with it. But it all gets feeling a little meaningless after you've done it the 100th time, and a bit like an old hound just licking the flea from his belly. I realize I'm really, really pissed off, and it's not going away anytime soon. And he's talking about, or she is talking, he, okay, I can't keep doing that. Talking about fighting this sense of anger and frustration since the election, and talking about making this body of darker work.
Okay.
As a way of dealing with it. It's a very stream of consciousness letter. It's a very honest stream of consciousness kind of, I've just got to get this out of my head and say it to somebody. And thank you. You know who you are. Thank you for sending it to me. But then there was a follow-up email a few days later that said, I sent you a response in which I voiced my anger to the current political, moral, ethical issues we faced, and outlined my plan to begin a new project as a result that would in some way fight back. 8 hours later, I took the post down and scrapped the whole idea, because as angry and frustrated as I am, I just don't want to be that guy. I don't want to bring more ugliness into the world, no matter how justified I might sometimes think I would be in doing so.
Nice.
And that right there, that line, I don't want to bring more ugliness into the world. That's something that I think both of us, in fact, you and I have talked about it offline. I know we have, but the easiest response is to get angry.
Yeah. Getting angry is easy.
Yeah.
Making something new, tearing down is easy, building something is hard.
Yeah. And I was talking to Wilkening over the weekend, and he said, you know, and we were talking about this very thing, and he said, you know what I'd love to see? I'd love to see you do the paintings that you do in Ben Thomas's color palette.
Happy colors?
Yeah. You know, doing these sort of Easter colors, but try to get the same message across.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
And not make it so gritty and dark and directly responsive.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you should. That's fine.
He goes on, I've decided that the only antidote to this whole mess is to try very hard to bring something good into the world in other areas of my life through kindness, through generosity, through aid to those I'm able to help, etc. My creativity, such as it is, will remain off limits and will hopefully find some beauty to bring into the world as I go through my days. I just find it fascinating. And again, thank you, thank you, thank you for such an honest email. I will respond to it
post haste.
Yeah, in more detail. He ends it up with, I don't know how you and others are dealing with these issues, but I can tell you that for me, it's a real challenge. As much as I sometimes feel like striking back, I find after grubbing around down there only a little bit, I am only comfortable with and able to take the high ground. Right. Unfortunately, this leaves all the low ground wide open to those who don't concern themselves with such issues.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, so there are those out there, some of you listening right now, that feel the same way as this person, that maybe feel the same way as Ren Hang, that feel the same way as Bill and I have, and in some ways continue to.
It's how you respond to it. It's how you,
yeah,
how you act going forward that defines it.
Yeah. But, you know, like Bill said earlier, as much as you might feel like it, you really aren't alone.
Right.
And, you know, pick up the phone, call a friend, call a loved one, call a family member, call me. I'll listen. Bill will listen. You know, we've been there. We care about you guys.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, can we talk about something happy now?
I'm sure.
I'm bummed out.
Let's talk about the fact that the camera industry is going to hell in a handbasket.
Oh, great. Didn't we already talk about
it?
Isn't it?
You
isn't
put it in always, here, didn't you?
I don't think so.
I don't think I put this in here. I don't go to four thirds rumors.
Oh, you know what it was? You know what it was? I thought it was funny how I did put this in there, and I know why. It wasn't necessarily the subject matter. It was the fact that they put up this infographic to go, see, here's what's happening.
Yeah, the infographic is actually pretty funny. This is an infographic showing the quote unquote depressive state of the camera industry.
And right, that's what it was. Was I got a kick out of how they presented it on the infographic?
Although, you know, I want to take this as an example of how statistics can be misleading.
Yes,
because they only show back to 2010.
Yes,
if you show camera sales all the way back to say 2000 or 95, you'll probably see this huge increase from 95 to 2007 or something like that, right?
Right.
Or 2010, like. It's the same problem I have with the music industry bitching and moaning about their sales going down. It's like, well, your sales ballooned when CDs came out because people bought all the old stuff on CD and that was the way to do things. And then it went back down again. It's not like it was sitting up there at this high peak forever and now it's going down. It's like it went up and now it's going down, but you're kind of back where you were 20 years ago, which isn't great, but it's not like, you know, it's never been this low before or something like that, you know?
Right.
The things that are interesting about this, usual stuff, blah, 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 phones taking over the industry and whatever.
Sure.
Right. But it's interesting that there was this bump in 2012, 2013, where sales actually went up for a couple of years of SLRs and mirrorless. So that was when mirrorless cameras first sort of came into the scene, right? Like the early, like your camera, right? It was like 2012, 2013.
Yep.
And then it's sort of gone back down. So the mirrorless weren't the panacea that people wanted them to be to take over all the lost sales of SLRs. And a lot of this is like a lot of people getting out of the photography industry. Like there was like this peak where it was this huge hobbyist thing. And now it's not as much or whatever. A lot of people are shooting with their phones, etc.
But what did they expect, Bill?
Oh, this is the part that gets me.
Olympus, let's use Olympus as an example. Olympus comes out with this new camera, the EM12, that does 60 raw autofocused frames per second.
Yeah.
It does 4K. Yep. It will give you a 68 megapixel raw file in camera. I mean, why do you, let's say you buy this thing.
Who needs more than that?
Yeah. Why do you need another camera next year, the following year, the third, fourth, fifth year out?
Yeah. These things, the problem is that we have hit the plateau of quality in many ways. Like, assuming my camera keeps working like it does, I will have it for 3 or 4 years, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's just going to be my camera. In the same way that I had my 5D for...
If not longer.
Right. I had my 5D Mark III for, I think, 3 years or 4 years. I had the other one four years before that. Before that, I was buying a new one every couple years because they were leapfrogging each other. It went from 8 megapixels to 12 to 20 to whatever, you know. But at the point at which it flattens out and you're like, I don't need anything more than this, and it's still working, why break it? It's the same problem with computers, right? You and I are using Hackintoshes. We built my machine's from 2012. Yours is from 2011 or something like that.
Yeah. This is the longest I've ever had a computer.
Right. I used to build a new one every year.
Every year. You'd go to the computer fair and get a new chip, new video, you know, all that stuff.
And we talked about it last week. I mean, yeah, a new one would be maybe 20 or 30% faster, mm-hmm. but is there anything that's so slow on my computer that 20% faster would change my life? No.
Right.
Because I don't work like that, you know?
Right, right.
So, you know, I'm not exporting 600 photos from a wedding or whatever it is, and that taking 5 minutes less can save me X amount of time. Like, it doesn't add up like that for me.
Right.
So I don't see it in a different way. So yeah, you've gotten to the point where every camera is great. And even the cameras from last year or the year before, great. You came out with a new model that's does 60 frames per second at 4K as opposed to 24. It's like, okay,
Okay.
But does that
justify the $400 you're going to get for that on eBay versus the $2,500 it's going to cost you?
Right. Exactly. So it's, yeah, the quality has painted themselves into a corner, you know? And then on top of that, I think that the whole idea of, I don't know about you.
You got a tour bus that let out?
Is it really loud?
What is that?
I don't know. You hear noise?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know where that's coming from. Are you sure it's not in your room? You turn around, there's actually a tour bus that's let out.
Oh, you know what it is? I'm an idiot.
What is it?
It's that Gilbert O'Sullivan clip.
Oh.
I had it playing in the background. I'm like, what the hell's going on? Sorry,
we'll get to that in a second. I don't even know. I lost my train of thought. Oh,
sorry.
The fact that I think that in my own experience, there are less people I meet who are just like, oh, I've got a 5D. I think I'm going to become a professional photographer tomorrow. Like, there's a lot of people who gave up on that dream because they realize that it's not all that it's cracked up to be and not easy to just jump into and make a living at it, which, you know, is just a reality of the market maturing in some way, you know.
Mm.
So, they're going to sell less gear. But, you know, as long as they make enough gear, that's fine with me. All right. So who's this photographer who built all these crazy sets and where did he get the money to build them?
Yeah,
he's building houses to take pictures.
Yeah, this was from a while back, and this is very. I mean, look, I love this stuff because it strikes that it checks that Gregory Crudson box.
Yeah, they're beautiful. Yeah,
and they're atmospheric and they're moody. And he's
Nikki Hamilton.
And, yeah, Nikki Hamilton, a self-taught photographer. Even though I have a problem with that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
what does that even mean? He didn't go to school for it.
Yeah. So he just wrapped a photo series called The Lonely Man based on the emotions of his own childhood, featuring various scenes from around a house. So basically the guy got a warehouse and built all of these.
Spent tens of thousands of dollars building houses inside of it.
Building all these sets. Now, I mean, I don't know where the money came from, but there's got to be money there because he's shooting with medium format. He's building, you know, all these different sets and
hey, maybe he put lots of money on his credit card. We don't know, but
maybe.
It does seem like the kind of thing where the guy's got means, is all I'm saying.
What is kind of cool is he has done a series of time-lapse movies of the build. So you can see him going to town from roughing in the framing to, putting together details. Now, he's using Festool brand tools, which I got to tell you are fantastic tools, but you will pay for them.
It's also, he's also pre-vising everything in some sort of 3D software too. Did you see those?
Yeah. I think it's Maya.
Okay. Could be. Yeah.
I think. But you know, pretty fantastic.
No, beautiful. They're beautiful. Bravo. I give this guy. Yeah, no, they're great. Who has the time and money to do this? Like, I would love to do this. Anybody got $100,000 they want to give me? You know?
So this ticks a lot of boxes for me. I love seeing the construction aspect of it. I love seeing the detail and placement of props and lighting and wallpaper choices. And so, Nikki, bravo.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really fantastic stuff.
Yeah, beautiful. I'll put a link in the show notes. If you
go to his website, look that first image of the two kids just kind of looking up into the ceiling.
Yeah.
Beautiful
yeah.
shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very evocative of Mr. Crudson.
Oh, very much so. You almost to the point where you wonder if, you know, obviously Crudson didn't start it from nothing. I mean, he came from something, but I wonder if this guy would make this stuff if it weren't for Crudson, and Crudson would have made this stuff if it weren't for whoever, you know what I mean? It's always the constant step. So the other day, I think Conrad was singing some song. Oh, we ended up singing, ooh, the laughter in the rain, walking hand in hand.
Sure. With the one you love, sure.
And then, so I pulled it up on YouTube, Neil Sedaka, I guess it is.
Yeah,
Neil pulled Sedaka, it up on YouTube, and over
who's
on
still
the right,
out there doing his thing.
Is he?
Yeah.
And Gilbert O'Sullivan, Alone Again, Naturally, was
yep.
one of the other pictures, the other video. So I clicked on that, and we were listening to that. And then there was this video of some guy who went and found Gilbert O'Sullivan to interview him about this song. And it's like a little 13-minute sort of documentary kind of thing with some footage of him singing it. But then it's him talking about the song and the fact that, you know, he makes this point, and you and I have talked about it a little bit, but I want to get your thoughts on it, where he says, you know, he's like, this song means what it means to me. And yeah, I was talking about my mother. I was talking about a mother, but I wasn't talking about my mother. Like I can put myself into the place of this character. And he says, that's what being a good lyricist is about, is that I can be this person without being that person, you know?
Right. Right.
And he said,
it's the same thing that Springsteen has done for 30 years.
Exactly.
You know, putting himself in that role.
He's not working at a steel mill anymore.
Right.
Yeah. He found the promised land. Still in New Jersey though, apparently. Gilbert O'Sullivan says something along the lines of, you know, people come to me and they say, you know, this song, and you talk about the mother, you talk about this, you talk about that. And like, I understand what you're saying. Like, this is my experience. And he's just like, well, look, that's not what I was getting at, but that's okay. Cause this song, once you let it out there, it's your song. It's not my song.
Right. What does it mean to you?
Right. And yeah, you know, sure. you and I all the time talk about how, oh, I want to know what the artist had to say in this thing. And there's a lot to be said for that, in the sense that it's interesting from our point of view of making stuff, how it is that they went and came up with the idea and what the idea was and how they executed and how that translation happened. And that gives us some insight into their process, which you and I find interesting. But ultimately, it all just comes down to what the other person, what the audience thinks of it, you know? And I guess I said to Conrad yesterday, you know, the whole George Lucas thing of, you know, changing Star Wars. Well, he made Star Wars. Is he allowed to change Star Wars? Or is Star Wars owned by the audience nowadays, you know, owned by the fans in some sense, you know? And I don't know. I just thought that it's very interesting. The idea that once you let it go, it's not really yours anymore. And I want to know if you agree with that statement or not.
I do, by and large.
Yeah.
By and large, yeah. I think once you have deemed it finished and released it into the world, yeah, to a large degree, it is no longer yours. Hmm. The it takes on a meaning of its own. It takes on a life and life cycle of its own.
Yeah.
Yeah, like when Spielberg went back and changed E.T.
The old guns to walkie-talkies.
Yeah, the guns to walkie-talkie and you know, some of Elliot's language. It's like, well, you yourself called that a classic, a masterpiece. Well, if it was such a masterpiece, then what had to be changed?
Right.
Why not just leave it alone?
It's true.
I mean, is Coppola going to go back and reshoot scenes of The Godfather?
Right. But Coppola seems more okay with just letting things be what they are.
Yeah, he seems to be. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the way he talks about it is really interesting. And if anyone's interested in the way that musicians see that kind of stuff, it's an interesting little, it's worth 13 minutes.
Now, just to play devil's advocate for a moment.
Yep.
I can also see the value in certain instances of maybe reworking something, of reworking a song or reinterpreting a painting or...
Well, there was that episode of some podcast where guy was talking to Elvis Costello about how he realized that some other song was, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it was.
What was that?
Jesus, what was it? I do remember that.
I'll figure it out. Go ahead. Keep going.
And he did the song originally really fast and
right,
then
exactly.
changed the arrangement and slowed it down and it became a classic.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't remember what it was, but you and I both talked about that.
Revisionist History Podcast. It was on.
Yep. That's what it was. The Malcolm Gladwell.
Yep. I'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, that was a good episode. That's a great show. If you haven't listened to that show,
Gladwell had a good podcast.
Yeah. It's a terrific show.
What do you think about the just a really quick aside, the Revisionist History logo, where it's Revisionist History in some sort of serif font, and then it's kind of smeared at the ends of each word. Have you ever noticed that?
Let me look at it.
Revisionisthistory.com. We'll pull it up and it's up in the upper left-hand corner.
Oh, yeah.
Just from an art point of view, do you like that or not?
I think it's kind of cool. That ticks almost my David Carson box. I could see where that would just annoy the snot out of you, though.
Yeah.
Pick one.
Yeah.
Pick one or the other. Don't mix them.
Anyway, what you were saying, the reworking it is fine as long as it's sort of, no, this is the new version of this thing that I did, but I'm not going to get rid of the old one. I think that's what a lot of people were angry about.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. So re-release Apocalypse Now, as long as you're going to do Redux, don't destroy the original cut.
Have it be like, cinematic cut or, you know, whatever, theatrical cut or whatever the hell.
I got you. I can see that.
Although, I mean, at a certain point, movies are a whole other thing because other people have so much say, right?
Sure.
They made me cut 45 minutes. That ruins the story if you take it out. So I'm going to put it back in. And it's like, well, okay, that's one thing. It's another thing when if you say, I'm going to take this thing that I said was done and now redo it. It's like, no, hold on a second. This is beloved by hundreds of millions of people. You can't just go hacking it apart and adding Jabbas, you know?
Right.
It's like, I don't know. Anyway, Gilbert O'Sullivan, check it out. It's worth another little 13 minutes. And it's so cute, him sitting in his like little kitchen.
Right.
It's adorable. So there's a new documentary coming out, huh?
Yeah, and I'm not sure. I mean, I like Mick Rock's work, but there is also this persona around Mick Rock I can't wrap my head around where Mick Rock begins and ends, and where the legend of Mick Rock begins and ends.
Well, I wonder if this is going to give us some insight into that.
Yeah, so I'm curious about it. I mean, certainly no denying he was there and documented and captured the feeling of rock and roll for many people, most famously Bowie and Queen. But and Sid
called
Barrett,
shot the psycho spiritual mantra of rock.
Yeah,
I'll put a link in the show notes. So when is it getting actually released?
April 7th.
Oh, April 7th, and it's available
simultaneous
on
iTunes. iTunes.
All right, so in a month we'll have to discuss that.
Yeah, so take a look at it, see what you think. Could be interesting. I love his work. I think he's fascinating, and I think one of the things that fascinates me about him is he wasn't an outsider. He was in the scene.
Right.
You know, he wasn't a guy sent to document XYZ or sent to photograph XYZ. He was friends with these people. He was in there. He was sure. He was in the thick of it, you know, partaking in the debauchery of the day and happened to have a camera with him.
I think there was also a lot less, PR teams watching Absolutely. Over everything. And I mean, it was just a very different world.
Yeah. Especially with David Bowie. I mean, sure. he was sort of for a long time, he was Bowie's photographer and that was it.
Right.
You know, so fascinating look though.
Let's go to the tape here. Let's go to the assignments.
Roll that beautiful bean footage. Right.
Bruce's shot's nice.
Yeah, there's some really cool stuff. I love okay, we got a new one. Carolus. Oh go. Let's see. Druvicius?
Yeah, Druvicius. Yeah, Druvicius, something like that.
Carolus.
I'll buy that.
Carolus, if we are butchering your name, which we probably are, please send us a voicemail or record you saying your name and send it to us so we don't do it in the future. But that's a terrific shot. In Barcelona, Spain. Man, that looks great, doesn't
look
it?
Look at the Mario Mirabile. Look at his Mirabile. Picture of the woman flipping her hair while eating a sandwich or something.
Yeah. I think heretofore known as Mario from Melbourne.
Oh, is that what we decided? Okay.
Well, it's what he requested in his
God,
in
that
his
is
voicemail.
So beautiful. Look at that picture.
It's a great shot.
Ugh, I hate you. That's amazing. Okay.
Paul Yan, street vendor, cooking.
Oh yeah, those are great.
They're not. I guess they wouldn't be kebabs. What would they be? What would you call that?
Like meat on a stick kind of thing.
Like yakitori. Is that
yeah,
what that is?
Could be. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the guy's actually cooking in the wok. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a good shot. James
Man,
Haddock,
Mario
nice
did
one.
Another one of the holy crap, he's on fire.
Wait,
the further down, the chopsticks and forks
oh,
and spoons.
Oh, yeah, with the shadows.
Holy cow, that's amazing.
That's a nice one. Yeah.
That's a beautiful picture. Oh, killing it. I like James Gunning's shot of the cows and it's mealtime.
Yep. What else we have? Dennis,
hey,
little
Josh,
cafe where we had our Sunday lunch.
Josh Peterson Josh is eating a zinger.
A zinger and two cupcakes.
Yeah. I was not a fan of the zinger. Man. I have to admit when you made me eat the zinger.
We were in the grocery store the other day. The girl has never had a zinger, a Twinkie, a ding dong, a cupcake. None of that.
What how kind of mother is she? You could tell her I said that. Really?
Yeah, never had them.
A Twinkie? So,
never had a Twinkie.
That's sad.
Yeah. Boy, Paul Yan, killing it. A lot of good stuff. Akshat Segal, my kind of mealtime at Bar Chef in Toronto.
Fancy. Liquid-filled grape that pops in your mouth.
Oh, my God. That's amazing looking. Yeah. Yes, please.
Sphere Mojito.
Yeah, I'll take
that. Wow. Crazy.
Barry, mealtime coming soon. Little market that's closed. Another one from Carolus. Good shot. Wow, a lot of great stuff.
Oh, all right. So
Johan, the squirrel with a little nut. Mealtime. That's nice.
It's cute. what are you thinking for this week?
This time, going back to the basics. Contrast.
Okay. Contrast.
And you can interpret that however you like.
I do like it. And
contrast.
I'd like to interpret it as contrast.
Yeah.
I will put it in the show notes, contrast. All right, so Photographer of the Week, I chose it, but I'm terrible at pronouncing it. Are you good at pronouncing it?
I believe it's Laurent Nival.
Ooh, so good.
Laurent Nival.
Yeah, it was.
Hello, Laurent. Hello, Jeffrey. How are you?
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, two things I wanted to bring up before
I'm blown away that we haven't used this guy because I friggin' love his work.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. And you know, somebody sent an email in years ago suggesting him. Paul sent it in 2013.
Yikes.
4 years ago. Somehow it got lost in the shuffle. And so we're trying to fix that. Here's my question. Go to his main website there, right?
I mean, look at that girl's set. just the way it's toned and
These are the two things I wanted to discuss.
Colors are just
I want to discuss his
good.
Toning.
Yeah.
And I want to discuss, if you go to his homepage, right?
Yes.
And I don't know what he's using for this site.
But probably WordPress.
Do you see how there's almost a screen door effect on these images?
Yeah, there's like a half tone over the top of it.
Do you think he must have added that before upload, right?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a CSS thing.
Oh, it is, you think?
I think it's an overlay. Yeah.
Okay, because I thought it was very interesting the way the texture it gives it. It's like grain, but not grain, you know?
Keep talking.
Anyway, you figure that out.
I don't think he's adding that on.
Okay. To me, it's the toning and the angles, like there's something about his stuff feels like film, but I don't think it's shot on film. Does that make sense?
Makes sense. Yeah.
I mean, to the point where you look at it and you go, God, how did he get that toned that way? That is amazing.
And his motorsports photography.
Oh,
incredible.
It's outrageous.
Yeah. Absolutely incredible.
God, how did we find out? How did you find out about this guy?
There was a race with vintage race cars that he documented several years ago. And
we talked about that. Yep.
Remember that? I saw that. I don't think it was La Carrera Panamericana. There's another race that was, I don't remember what it was, but he was photographing like Porsche 917s and Ford GT40s and all these vintage, you know, amazing vintage Le Mans cars. And it just, the way he sees them is so phenomenal. And they do have that like late 60s, early 70s motorsport feel.
Well, and some of the panning shots he gets with the cars almost feel like that Latigue shot of the race car, right? I mean, it's got that feel.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, in his black and white stuff, I mean, talk about the toning. He'll crush the blacks, but like then pull them up a little bit from black. So it's just like this carbon kind of black.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great way to describe it. Carbon. Yeah. It's very rich and deep, but there's still detail. Yeah.
So
we're gushing over him.
Well, you can understand why. You can see now the stuff with Moriyama
absolutely.
The commonalities.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even if you go to the Vimeo link that I put in there, he does video stuff too, right?
Yeah.
DP stuff. The fourth one in is this 60 second director's cut of a car ad. I don't know if you see that, or it's like and it's just you hit play and you're like watching it.
Oh, the DS60
ANS.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and you look at it and you watch it and you go, oh, like some of these shots look like they're out of time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the way that they're graded and stuff. Oh, so beautiful, just beautiful.
Yeah, he's pretty sick.
I don't know. What else do you want to say about this guy? Before we embarrass ourselves,
right,
falling all over him.
Let's see. Let's look in the shop. What does he have? Prints for sale, I think.
Oh, does he?
Oh, and the Race of Gentlemen. That was another thing that I think he photographed.
Oh, yeah. The motorbikes. Here we go. We can get some pictures on motorbikes. Yep.
Anyway, really good stuff.
Yeah, he's he sells prints. 79 euros. To 50,000, 500 euros, 79 to 500 euros.
So what's the euro?
Three
is
different versions.
Close to the dollar. Yeah.
It's around a dollar now. So,
yeah.
It is 35 by 50 centimeters. So that's like a foot by a foot and a half, is $79, all the way up to 85 by 120 centimeters, which is a big print.
Yeah.
Which is 500, which is all a good price. If you're into one of these are beautiful. That is a very reasonable price for this level of print.
Yeah. His toning is some of the best I've ever seen.
God, I'm envious of it, and I want to, that's on my list.
Yeah. This pan shot, I don't know if, let's see, can I get that? No, I can't get it. Anyway, it's one of the pan shots of a kind of a baby blue, one of the Gulf Porsche 917s.
Sure.
It's slightly out of focus, but man, is it a beautiful shot. Just a little bit of motion blur.
Well, that's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
I think it was the Le Mans Classics that you liked the ones
might have been. Yeah, it might have been.
God, look at those. Holy crap. Anyway. But go check it out. Go
Laurent
look.
Duval. Good stuff.
Feel very terrible.
His work
yourself.
Is just sexy. It's elegant and sexy. Yeah. And you were right, out of time. It doesn't evoke any particular period.
No,
other
I mean,
than
like
just cool.
There's cars in here that evoke a certain period, but somehow even the cars feel out of time in their own era. It's just crazy. So go check that out.
The Le Mans Classic. That was the set I believe that I originally saw.
We're going to we'll put some links in the show notes to his Vimeo page and to his main website. So go buy a print because they're beautiful.
Yeah.
If you want to get a hold of us, 347-687-9411. We'll send us a voicemail. We love getting these voicemails. You guys have been
we'll talk about
it.
More of them next year. We're just trying to, you know,
next year.
We're running a little long. Or next year. Next year. Next episode.
And if you want to get a hold of Jeffrey and I, podcast at ontakingpictures.com, Twitter, Instagram, Bill Wadman, Jeffrey Sidoris.
Yep.
Anything else?
I think I'm good.
Yeah, I'm going to go watch the snow. Or the rain, the sleet, the hail.
Yeah.
All of those things.
Just for the hail of it?
Ah, ba-dum-psh.
Yeah.
You know, I went and got some fish last night just for the halibut.
Right. And you got some frosted flakes.
I did get some frosted flakes. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I think I'm...
I hear they're great.
I'm taking pictures of that woman.
Wait, of the frosted flakes woman? What do you
mean?
No,
the woman who took the picture of me.
Oh, yeah, okay. It was funny. Stuart Sipahigil was like, is this Bill Wadman?
Yeah.
It looks like Bill out in the wild.
I don't know how
he
found that person.
Look, Bill out in the wild. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. You good?
Yeah, I'm good. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thank you for listening and go be kind to each other.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. We'll see you next week.
This way, say what you wanna say.